So Roxanne, did you got the kiss from the sun?
Yes. Yeah. It's summer.
It's summer. I can see it in your skin. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast, The Health Hunters. My name is Fernando.
And I'm Roxanne.
Yeah, Roxanne. Today, we have a guest with us.
We have a guest. And it's Amando, a holistic health coach.
How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much for inviting me onto your podcast. I'm quite excited.
Yeah, happy that you're here.
Yeah, excited to be here. Always nice to share
your knowledge,
healthy and knowledgeable, insightful things.
Yeah. So we always ask the question, what is your definition of health?
Thank you. Yeah. It is a very complex question, I think. I think my definition of health would be congruence, would be balance in self. So where I'm coming from is, in my understanding of the human body, there are different layers to the body. So you've got your physical, your vital, your mental, super mental. And to have these different layers of your body in balance or in congruence brings a state of stillness and ease to the body. And for me, that is health. Yeah. Yeah.
Equilibrium is again one of the things and brings it like in all different layers and levels of
nice. Also homeostasis, right, as well?
Yeah, there was another one that people refer to
as homeostasis.
Other ones are saying like, yeah, exactly what is suitable for you, what do you do it like in your daily basis that keeps the things, you know, going.
And I feel that is so true, though sometimes I think we get distracted or misled by things that we think we should be doing that are causing us harm. And we might have just adapted to a state and not knowing what is happening to us. And we think, oh, this is just how life is. Yet the physical body is suffering or the mental body is suffering. And we just aren't aware of it. So helping people reach a greater potential in their health and helping them see what they might be doing that is causing a dis-ease in their body. So yes, we have to do all these things and this is our continual life. And like, yes, but something is causing a discomfort in your body. And like, yeah, but I'm not comfortable. This is how I normally am. And it's like, is it?
Is it really?
Yeah. And can be in many other levels, you know, it could be actually psychological, physical.
Like, 100%.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yes, I feel always tired after I eat, for instance, one of these things. And it's very common, but it's also not very normal to feel such a,
Exactly. It's like, oh, no, I always have coffee. That's normal. Is it? You know, so I think when people take away everything and start building up from the base on basic foods, things that don't have any, this is very challenging today's life with so many options and distractions and worldly things that we like to enjoy. But going back to basics and cutting out maybe caffeine or sugar or people, as in like people that you get addicted to, because we can be addicted to people, places, narcotics. It just becomes a something that's fulfilling something that we're missing. And sitting in stillness by yourself allows you to observe what it comes up in the body as an emotion or a feeling, allows you to see what you're craving to either mask or hide that. And then you'll see maybe certain foods, carbohydrates are nice.
Yeah.
Like pasta, bread, you know,
why not?
Yeah. And you might think, oh, actually, maybe I don't like the and the I am talking about is the observer of our ego gets addicted to all these things. And that I can observe these feelings that are coming up that are linking you to a certain food or a certain place or a certain substance that you're using to mask whatever feeling is behind it. And this is the unconscious mind that gets blurred out and blocked out. I mean, like, this is who I am. I'm like, yeah, but it might not be who you are. might be who you're playing to be or who you think you are. And when you give a person that moment to be in stillness and observe who they are, the one observing is maybe who they are instead of the one playing the role of, oh, I need this and I need this. So, yeah, running your day-to-day life is great and good, but taking a moment for stillness and just resting inside your breath, resting inside serenity and just connecting with your body and allowing whatever is hiding to come up allows you to observe what is you and what isn't you and what you might be leaning towards from a space of emptiness to fill that hole. So that's why I say, what is health? It's complicated.
Yeah.
If it was easy, we're not like hunting, right?
No, we're still on the hunt.
Yeah, it's definitely a seeker's world.
Yeah.
No, but it's one of the things that I witness, it's what is the most beautiful part of the process is the moment of realization. Like that precise second, right? Then you're like, wait, you know, like I see something different than you are doing like every day in your practice, good or bad. But the moment and it's like, oh, I'm doing this because it's good for me. Actually, I've been doing this, you know what I mean? Or opposites, like, oh, I should stop it because it's the moment and I realize that something is not carrying anything into lightness to guiding you to, you know, to a great place, right?
Yeah, exactly that. Things that expand you instead of contract you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and setting that intention, waking up, setting that intention for your day. I think intention's got a very big part of health. You know, you going out with friends. What is the intention of going out with friends? You're making a friendship. What is the intention behind this friendship? You know, what is the intention behind the food on your plate that you're putting into your body? Because that food is becoming who you are. You know, that gratitude, that emotion that you can share with people, things in your life. That emotional connection between your external and internal world is quite powerful. And that alone in itself creates a healthy body just by having gratitude for things in your environment.
No, like, so now the listeners might think, oh, wow, okay, setting intentions all the time. How did you, like, in the process, like, set intentions, but you really... notice it or you feel it? Because for me, sometimes I set an intention and then the intention is gone or something, or it's not maybe as strong enough.
So for me, setting intention with emotion behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Emotion is energy in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And using higher states of emotion is a great way to set intention, but set intention without expectation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, set the intention, put the intention there. Use the emotion of gratitude or use the emotion of love, but feel the love first, then set the intention.
Right.
Don't just mentally, oh, yeah. And then there's nothing to carry it.
Yeah.
So using that emotion to build up and give that intention energy to move forward. And yeah, it's kind of like the whole, this new, well, it's not new age, it's old knowledge or information creating your reality. You know, visualization. Yeah, visualization is great, but use the emotion to carry your visualization into this world.
Yeah.
And so with setting your intention, find a place of stillness, find a place where you can just be on your own and set your intention with an open heart, with brain-heart coherence, you know. So if you're going to set an intention, I want you to be happy, and you're inside, you're like, I don't really like this person. You know, that's not really going to work. So, yeah, I think setting your intention every day, every moment, holding that image in your head of your intention, or just keeping an awareness in the background of what intention you're carrying in your life,
mm-hmm.
continuously practicing. Because, I mean, if we do it once off, once a day, it's like starting a practice or a routine, you do it once off. Like, it's not really a routine. And the more you do it, the more you learn gratitude, the more you learn these higher states of emotions, happiness, joy, with intention, the better you'll get at it and the more you will see.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I believe.
Nice. Yeah. to connect also an emotional aspect with your intention.
Definitely.
Yeah, nowadays, I mean, people just think too much in their heads.
Mm.
Are they like,
do I have to do this? I have to do this. I have to do this. Instead of like, it's not I have to do this. You know what I mean? This has, you know, I don't even know how to verbalize like what, how to put an intention without have to thinking like I have to put this at first place or I, you know what I mean? Like without have to be something that it creates stress on people, you know, like the, I think he's missing really the, his intention, the word probably from it, but in a way it can explain really the action of doing that. So.
Yeah. Mental stress. You mentioned mental stress, people thinking, overthinking.
Yeah.
We get addicted to thinking.
If you think it that way,
especially the negative part, right? Like,
100%. And it's so interesting because it's just a distraction for what's going on in the body. So a lot of time when we escape into our mind, there might be something emotional that we're not dealing with. So if you set an intention to actually, I want to just sit down and be with myself and have an open heart, and sitting down and being with yourself and having an open heart, and whatever comes up, it could be anger or frustration or something like that. But if you have space for that with the intention of love and just acceptance, you can learn a lot about yourself. Then you might not start escaping to your head so much anymore. Yeah. It's very hard in today's life with social media and so much going on, and you have to do this and this and this. Like we said, you don't have to. You could set an intention of like, this is my capacity, and that's all I'm going to do. Everything else might get a no for now.
Mm-hmm. Intention exception. Okay, I'm already loving this. Yeah. Yeah, when you mentioned that, I think like people also get distracted with, I mean, music takes a lot of, you know, to distracting us to thinking about bad things, right? Mm-hmm. Like we always put like, you know, headphones and put some good music to try to distract ourselves. Then you can go a little bit higher and putting a TV, and then you get lost in that, you know, world of, you know, of TV to distract it without really fixing the problem, you know, like to trying to fix a wall with no really like just in paper wall. You know what I mean? Doesn't really work. You still have to look at the foundations to be able to look at that. And you can see that when people, especially when in terms of social media and things like that, where they get lost. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's interesting that you say, I mean, we do get lost, but we're not taught the tools. We grow up. I mean, you look at kids nowadays, they're on social media and they're not taught tools how to manage their emotions. They're not taught how to deal with this jungle, concrete jungle that we live in, you know? So their escape is social media because they've learned that. It's like we didn't know any better. Our parents didn't know any better. So a kid, it's easy to give a kid something, social media platform, so that you don't have to, you know, entertain. Yeah. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard because it is such a new age thing. It's, you know, we're in the age of technology, so it's all there. We're not given these tools to be like, okay, well, how do I deal with these emotions? How do I feel? How do I speak about how I'm feeling? How do I acknowledge myself? You know, I'm validating myself through everything else and looking for validation through everything else. And it's like, but if you just sit. But people don't know how to sit.
That's true.
Yeah, people don't know how to sit. It seems like the simple things.
Yeah, but that's the hardest.
That's the hardest, right?
It's always like that.
Yeah.
Okay, and how did you... Okay, let's go a bit back in the time. How did you come to, hey, I want to eventually become a holistic...
Good question.
...health coach?
So I've always been interested in health and alternative medicine or different ways, just to understand myself more. And I think I went through a lot of loss in my early 20s, and it just, the need for, or the wanting to seek something other than what I know.
Yep.
So the world is very easy, and it's like, oh, this is the world and this is what's happening. I'm like, but there's more than this. I can feel it, like my reality in front of me is what I'm perceiving, and I'm involved in it. But there's something else. There's something else inside of me that's yearning, that's looking, that's wanting to understand more. And I did a Reiki course when I was in my early 20s as well. And just connecting with that, I'm like, this world is not physical. There's more to it.
There's more, yeah.
Like, you can live a physical world in the physical world and just like enjoy and all these things. But I'm like, everything is carrying energy, is carrying frequency, and you can feel it. If you attune yourself to it and you become sensitive to it, you can feel it. And you don't have to be a Reiki master to do it. There's other methods of becoming sensitive. Some people are born sensitive to these things. They're empathic, or they're highly sensitive people. And that is the world that interests me, that intrigues me, because, I mean, even the food we eat, the intention we carry is frequency. It's if you're eating a lot of fast food, dense food, it will bring your energy down. If you eat more live food and those kind of things, healthier food, fresher food, it'll lift you up. And in yoga, it is like a sattvic diet, which is all fresh, healthy food. It's very hard in today's age with no time, rush. Fresh food is expensive, or healthier food is expensive for a lot of people. But that got me interested into working with people, working into holistic health, looking for something more than a Western medicine approach. Western medicine is great. It is a tool. There are many tools, or there are many books in the library. That what led me towards holistic medicine, wanting to help people in a different way. And yeah, the journey just started, and it started with Reiki. It moved to massage therapy to understand the human body a bit more. Then it went into plant medicine, working with ayahuasca in San Pedro for 2 years, and having that journey and experience. And then working with psilocybin, and yeah, progress.
So quite things that people are quite interested lately, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of they get like a lot of attention because of the other facts we have on it, but they do have a lot of healthy benefits on it. Yeah. Like, yeah. And people are rewatching it right now, because it has always been there in other medical systems, right? Yeah. Like, as you said, you are being searching for all of the ways of bringing you more knowledge, right? More,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, those plant medicines are amazing. A lot of it it's quite scary, because it becomes quite mainstream.
Yeah. That's probably where I'm trying to say how the mainstream can affect all of this. Then people believe and don't believe. Mm. It's like, it's nothing to not believe on it. Doing that as a fact of history has put a big pin on it, right? Yeah. Like, saying that it actually works. But then comes like all this scientific research and so on. Then some of them approve it, obviously, other ones not. And then you have the opinions of, you know, of people about things, and they don't really explore or dig on it. Yeah. You know? And that's take a big effect on what if these things can commercialize in a good way or not. Yeah.
That's a very good point. I mean, there is such a tradition of working with ayahuasca in like South America. You got shamans that have got lineages of generations working with these plants. These people are so attuned to energy and so attuned to what's actually going on energetically and with these plant energies. Then to bring it into mainstream, and you got your everyday person thinks, and someone thinks, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. It's like someone's just spent his lifetime lineage learning these things. And now we've got these neo shamans that think, oh yeah, I can just do this. Like, some people can, some people have gone through the training and done the work.
And they're born like this, as you said. It's unfortunately like it's found. These techniques sometimes are just you.
Yeah, some people are born into it. Some people are more sensitive to it. And I think sometimes it gives a bad rep to you know, look at these. This is what it does. It causes these problems, and it's very dangerous. Yeah, it can be very dangerous if you're not doing it with the right people. It can be very dangerous. But if you're doing it with the right people, with the right intention.
Do you think like also the teachers like matters? Like, of course, this was like all the grandfather, the grandson, right? But I think like teachers also doing that, right? There was a response, a connection up there between of a teacher and the student to be able to have this, all this knowledge passing from generations and generations, right? Yeah. Compared to nowadays, then you probably see this type of, I mean, I'm not against like online training now, for instance. I think it's very practical trying to connect technology to like this modern days to how people used to travel like a lot the distance, you know what I mean? It's like kilometers, you know what I mean? To walk all the way to see the doctor, you know, to see the healer. Arts and practice, right?
Yeah, definitely. And like, there's nothing wrong with a plant or these things becoming mainstream. It's just for them to be used respectfully and with caution. Because I mean, I'm no master in any of this. I'm still a student. But in my experience, it's just,
you always want to be students.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my experience, if people don't have the right integration after these ceremonies, it can just become another addiction. You know, people go to ceremonies, they're like, oh yeah, no, I've done like this many and this many. I'm like, yeah,
I've done the work.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you shouldn't need to know how many you've done. No one needs to know how many you've done. So why?
You should actually didn't have to be that. That means like you are actually good.
Yeah, counting?
Okay. Yes, yeah, counting.
But yeah, so I worked with that a bit. And then I started my bachelor's in natural integrative medicine through the Quantum University of Hawaii. And that has just been astounding in how they bridge the gap between physical and, I'm going to say, vital bodies through consciousness being the ground of all being. And consciousness is the gap. Consciousness is that which connects everything. And so Dr. Mithu Goswami refers to it as the vital bodies, and this is also in very yogic terms, the vital body, or modern day, what is the morphogenetic field, where we find diseases or imbalances in this field, and it collapses into our centers, our chakras, or into specific centers of the body, comes up as physical ailment, and consciousness is that which connects that. It's very interesting because this path of integrative medicine, it's not just integrative medicine as in vitamins and minerals. So it's all great if you need them. But it's more of a, like I said before, congruence. It's finding that congruence, finding that archetype that we're creating in our head and or our mind, and seeing if there is something in that thought process that is creating the imbalance, the wrong mental meaning, or that thought process, like I said, creating that imbalance in the vital body and then representing itself in the physical body. So in his teaching, it's, you have your physical, vital, mental, supramental, and bliss body. And through a process of downward causation, disease or dis-ease comes from the top. Mm-hmm. And it moves down through these bodies. And if you're sensitive enough and you can pick them up before they become physical. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you don't also have to be sensitive enough. You could know that there's something emotionally not good with you or something emotionally upsetting you, and you could talk about it. And that way the emotion body, the vital body, doesn't need to bring it into the body for us to see. I mean, they are all messages. Mm-hmm. Your body is just giving you messages that you're not paying attention to it. In this understanding and this growth through this degree, it's just allowed me to understand more and deeper information on how to help people and how to further, I suppose, help myself and integrate myself, you know, find my own integration, because the more I learn about myself, the more I can help others. And I think even from a healer, healy connection, a lot of the time someone might come into your clinic to give you the message that what you need to heal, you know, and you could heal each other. It's an exchange. It's a connection. It's not a disconnected, you need to do this, this, and this, and you can go. There's a bond, there's a connection between the healer and the healee. And it's a journey. So Quantum University has helped me understand that. And this degree has helped me with a lot of introspection in understanding myself and further developing my knowledge on where I want to be in my life and how I want to provide a space for people to connect to a deeper part of themselves and in turn find their healing, whatever that may be for them. It doesn't have to be complete perfect health. No one's Superman. And if someone is, that's great.
Yeah. We are really here like taking, how do you do that? You know,
that's a very good question.
Yeah. Because, you know, it is, I think like everybody goes to different professionals to looking also for, you know, as a doctor, go to a doctor, respecting the opinion of a colleague and all these kind of things. And mechanics the same way. If you put the car in the office, and obviously they can discuss about what, you know, it's the problem of the engine of a car or something I'm trying to, you know, put in here in the system. Then it really doesn't work like that way when in terms of spirituality, but it's how to point of views, you know what I mean? Like, seeing each other, and they can say like, this, you know, could be something, but at my point of view is different what you think this thing it is, right? So how do I do it?
So there is an assessment. So observation. So let's say a client walks in, I'll be looking at how they're holding themselves, how they're walking, how they're breathing, how they sound when they talk to you. And there is a assessment that you can do on how do they let go? How is their passion? How is their drive? And all these are just markers on, or indexing on, where a person's health can be. Also, you can check about a person's heart rate, see their temperature. You could look at their tongue. You could look at their feet as well, seeing any discolorments on their feet. Different smells on different feet also indicate different diets. If someone's skin is a different color, or they've got blotches on their skin, you can assess these kind of things and just index it and see where a person is. And from that space, you could have a sort of guidance on what a person might need. If someone's going through a big time of loss, you can see that they almost will be hunched over, heart sore. And, you know, there's a space for that, and there's a space for grieving. So there's that kind of assessment that you could do. And also, by providing a space for a person to be themselves and educating them on how to breathe and how to be, like I said before, in stillness. So you don't have to give, I don't have to give a person this whole list of things that they have to go and do. It's more of what they can do at this moment and starting someone off small. So let's say providing someone with a space where they can learn stillness, learn to connect with their breath, learn to slow down. That in itself already is already calming down the nervous system and allowing them to start healing. So when we're so stressed and hyped up, there is no healing. You're just carrying on and you're just surviving. So by giving someone the guidance, the technique, the tools to bring themselves back and provide them with that space to be still, or that space to be vulnerable in a way, and allow whatever needs to come up in a space of openness, acceptance. In that space, that's how I would help my client. So from there, also giving dietary advice or goal setting,
But how do you actually get healed from your client? That's what
I,
yeah,
how do
yes,
I
yeah.
get healed
yeah,
from
exactly.
my client?
Yes, because it's worked in that way. And yeah. when you mentioned it about the fact that when you can also use the olfactory system
yes,
to
yes,
know
yes,
someone.
Yes.
Today, I actually had this conversation with a colleague of mine because he's saying like, oh, sometimes I eat onions, sometimes I smell like, sometimes I don't. I was like, well, it looks like something go, you know, two
yes,
channels,
yes, yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So like, and you go out and then you can smell it or not. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah.
Yeah.
So how do I heal myself
yes.
and my clients?
They do always questions reminding you things that you learned from
100%,
your academics, you know, or from experience.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah, yeah. But not only that, I think meeting with clients with a specific wound might touch your own wound.
Yeah,
so,
that's unexpected, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Also.
Yeah, and or they might show you how you react. So someone, you've got a client that comes in and is struggling with anger and you're being impatient. So now you can learn how to deal with your impatience instead of being patient for their anger. So you might be angry inside about something. They might be triggering something inside of you that you can go work on. Or I could go work on
mm-hmm.
because this might happen in quite a few clinical settings or settings. But I think everyone that you interact with in your life, any trigger to anything provides you with that space of healing. So how do my clients heal me? By showing me who I am, by providing me that possibility to be open-hearted, you know?
And with time becomes easier?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think practicing gratitude and practicing kindness and forgiveness, not only for others, but for self, definitely comes much better, much easier with time. But it's practice. It's like a muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah. We practice anger and frustration and impatience all day with our busy lives. So we get stuck there. So the more we sit back in stillness and learn to practice gratitude, the easier it becomes.
Is there any space specifically where you want to, you know, stay in stillness? You know what I mean? Like, is there any way that you use your mind as a tool to put you in a place where you can be sitting still? You know what I mean? Like to help you to calm down. It's like the beach is easier with all that dynamism of the ocean. It actually makes you feel still, or is the wood like a place to, is the, yeah.
Personally?
Yes. Yeah.
yeah. So yeah. Personally.
I think it only works personally, right? I don't think so.
Yeah, it would work personally, but I think there's so many attributes. I mean, the sea is, you've got water, you've got the energy of cleansing and water, and forest, you've got that grounding energy, that nurturing energy. You know, you go to, let's say you go to the Amazon forest. I mean, like it's like the mother's womb of the world. The Amazon's quite humid, so you've got that whole experience. So if, for myself, the optimal place for stillness, I think would be the mountains.
The mountains.
Yeah. Yeah. I think mountains in themselves bring so much energy to this place. It's just amazing. You know, you're connecting there, you're up high altitude.
Do you go, you connected like with all the layers of land has been mountains been created or, you know, from up or from down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I would say, you know, so mountains is a good, it's
yeah.
a good answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. You can connect next to a waterfall, you know, connect to that water energy, that flowing, that emotional energy. And
rain. Actually, Roxanne, she has like audio of the rain in Brazil.
Oh, yeah. I also went to Brazil.
Oh,
yeah. And then the rain was also very nice.
Yeah. And it's healing.
Yeah.
It is healing. Even in just sitting in the wind is healing.
Yeah.
Allowing that wind to move over your body, cleanse your aura.
Yeah, I walk on the beach.
Walk on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you can cleanse with sage, you can cleanse with fire, you know.
Yeah, that's true. You can use anything to...
Yeah, so those are cleansing, but stillness, it's easier to find stillness in a place where there's hardly any distractions, you know, like a Buddhist in a mountain temple.
Can the Buddhists do meditation in the city? Because I mean, they are the most like
they're
trained.
The most,
yeah,
yeah. So maybe better than us. I mean, they've learned to solidify, or how do I say, have a strong constitution for their practice. So it might be easy for them, but they might not be used to the distractions that we have.
That's the point. You know, I think it's like we are used to always to, okay, stop, breathe. And that we constantly do that in a way to, but in this surrounding. So if actually we have so much distractions and so on, but is not being in a mountain the easy way to get into a meditation point of view? You know what I mean? Like compared to a person who's been standing in a mountain doing the meditation, being still, and then he comes to the city and tries to do the same thing in a train direction, to, you know, on the metro. You know what I mean? Like, but we see people doing that in the metro. Yeah. Some of them, they're actually grabbing the smartphones and so on, but other ones, they are just like, you know, still, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like waiting to arrive to the point. But at the same time, we see a little bit of sadness, you know, and other things, and it can contribute also for what that the human being that is in front of us. So we'll know the full story, but yeah.
I think it can be quite distracting, this world, this busy life that we live. I think it takes quite a lot of skill to find stillness.
Yeah.
I think if you create a space in your home or where you can, it doesn't have to be a big space, but just a space, and use the same space every day, because you're creating an energy in that space and set an intention for that space. A kitchen is made for eating. You walk into a kitchen, you might start getting hungry, you lie on your bed, you start getting tired, you know, set an intention, create a space, and the intention will grow, the energy of that space will grow.
So you see yourself having a piece of land in the mountains probably in the future?
And not in the Netherlands. But it would be lovely. It would be lovely. The only problem is, if I'm going to be serving my purpose in helping people, I want to make myself available. And yeah, being in the mountains is nice, but is it accessible for everyone, for people who don't have money to travel?
Perhaps I will probably say, when you give already a lot for the society and you wanted to use your time, your material body on this earth, you know what I mean? Like what you wanted to do in the end of your, you know, of your days, you know?
Where would I like to retire?
Exactly.
Yeah, mountains, forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice place to be. Yeah.
A place of peace. Peace is in the mind as well. So you could live here and have peace, but I think the energy is a lot different out in nature. So definitely something in nature.
Do you come from a place where you have a lot of nature?
Yeah. So I was born in South Africa, Italian family, but yeah, lots of nature, trees. I mean, traveled to many amazing places, just mainly focused on wildlife, nature, Amazon, you know, Arctic Peninsula, these beautiful places.
Traveling
into nature, it's healing, it's medicine. We used to have a house in the bush also. So
nice.
Used to just be there and overlooking a lake. So very privileged, very grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And when you're mentioning about like, yeah, the best investment you can do in yourself is traveling and learning, right? Like it's probably one of the things. Yeah.
You
should do it. It's never too much, right?
It's never too much.
Can you count it?
Which?
How much you learn and how much you travel?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
So on that note, do you have any book recommendations?
Yeah, actually, as I mentioned, Dr. Amit Goswami, he's a quantum physicist and quite an amazing man. He wrote a book called The Quantum Doctor, and it is a beautiful book. I want to say it's not too challenging to understand, but it is very insightful, and the man, how he works and his connection of consciousness connecting and consciousness being the ground of all being is quite amazing. And I like his yogic approach or Eastern approach. Is it Eastern? Yeah. From here. approach to healing, as he doesn't discredit Western medicine. So he doesn't discredit any book of healing, that integrates all of them.
Do you have to prepare yourself to read this book?
No, so when you can be like, anyone.
Yeah,
anyone, and you can read this book.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was a very interesting book that you recommended. For the people who wants to connect to Amundo, you have an Instagram.
Yeah.
I will put that in our show notes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you so much for coming here and talk about what you do.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been such an honor and privilege. Been very fun chatting to you both.
Yes.
Yeah, this was very nice. Thank you so much. Yeah. Hope you're coming like next time.
Yeah.
Thank you. Definitely.
Well, this is the end of this episode. If you want to contact us, you can go on our Instagram, The Health Hunters, or email us, thehealthhunters@gmail.com. See you next time.